Very small. Two months?
2 months, yeah.
Very small.
Very fortunate, too.
If we were only so fortunate, 2 months old. Does the child like kirtan?
Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing how children can, at such a young age, respond. Then you have to wait to see when they grow up what happens. Especially teenage. So, I wanted to speak this evening focusing on one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and then going from there. The first canto, Prabhupada explained that the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, not only its composition, but how he presented the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, is in itself sufficient for God realization. And he often described that the devotees, sometimes we find that there's a tendency to accumulate many, many books but not really understand any one of them. So it's, this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is an especially nice text to become very familiar with and prepare yourself to go back home, back to Godhead with it. And the composition, the first three cantos, excuse me, first three chapters of the first canto, are like a summary within the summary. First canto being, or the first and second canto, being darshan of the Lord's lotus feet. And in the first three chapters is a summary of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Or to say it the other way around, the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion of that compact presentation of those first three verses, first three chapters. You'll find all essential knowledge there. The image that comes to my mind when I think of this is like making a giwik from cotton. When you make giwik from a cotton, you take some cotton and you twist it and pack it and it becomes very compact. And with it you can make a giwik and offer to Krishna. But that same giwik, if you fluff it out and pull it apart, it has so many strands and twists and turns of the fibers, and then again you can put it back together and compact it and twist it and turn it and offer it to Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto is like that, and the first three chapters are especially like that. Very compact presentations. And it's nice to relish the meanings found there and then just to expand further and further as Vyasadeva did. So in the first three verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's an invocation and a declaration and a declaratory statement what the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is. The Srimad Bhagavatam is describing Paradharma, not just Sanatana Dharma, but amongst the eternal occupation, eternal activities of the living entity, the supreme occupation of the living entity. And that's the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. nothing to do with the advancement of material attainments, which is found within the Vedas, but the Srimad Bhagavatam is just focusing on Paradharma. And to introduce the subject, a classic form of presentation is made, and that is the situation of a dialogue. And there's circumstances surrounding the dialogue, the sages of Naimisharanya wanting to counteract the influence of the age of Kali. And so they request Suta Goswami to describe Srimad Bhagavatam. And very, very wonderfully, the presentation is such that as a theme in this first canto, the proper, you could say, protocol, the etiquette to be observed, but more important than the etiquette to be observed is the opening of the heart of the sages of Naimisharanya to the wealth that Sutta has to offer. They're eager to hear from him, and they express that, and they express their specific reason why they're eager to hear from Sutta amongst all persons. What is they're establishing their qualification by recognizing his qualification and opening themselves to the flow of mercy, and they present specific questions. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. They're submitting themselves and they're offering specific questions, and very important questions. And then in the response, how the proper speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam addresses himself, he fixes his mind upon the personality of Godhead, and he fixes his mind upon his spiritual master, and he invokes their mercy, and he appreciates the wonderful questions of the sages. And then he begins speaking, and the answers that he gives constitute the second and third chapters of first canto. So one verse in particular is what I wanted to focus on, where Sutta is describing the means by which the very, very difficult circumstances of this age of Kali can be not only conquered, but crossed over. So that verse specifically, Srinvatasva kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantaksto yabhadrani vidhunoti suritsatam. One of the important stages in devotion is eradication from the heart of things unwanted. So that's the anartha nivritti stage of devotion. Hare Krishna. Or the abhadras, the undesirable things in the heart being removed. There's bhadra and abhadra. And there's Lady Subhadra too. So bhadra means auspicious. Actually, Prabhupada named one Mataji disciple Bhadra Dasi. She was our head cook in the Brooklyn Temple for a long time. And he also named one young man Bhadra Das. So he liked the name Bhadra. Bhadra and Bhadra. Bhadra Dasi and Bhadra Das. And Abhadra, that's, he didn't name anybody Abhadra. The process of hearing eradicates the Abhadras. Vidhunoti Suhrit Satam. makes the heart pure and clean. Now, I recall hearing Prabhupada address a doubt. It's not an uncommon doubt that people have, especially when we're taking to the process of devotional service, and we find, when we take to the process of devotional service, what do you find? You find thing abhadras in the heart. You find unclean, impure things in the heart that are sometimes shocking and very embarrassing, and just want to put the lid back on. Like a jack in the box. And put the lid back on. But the process of devotional service is one that actually cleanses those abhadras. So it's good. It's not good that those things are in the heart, but it's good that those things are becoming cleansed from the heart. And the bhakti process will accomplish that. So, a fairly common question is, how will it be possible for me, considering how much anarthas are resting in my heart, or how many inauspicious things, embarrassingly and shockingly, are there. So part of the thinking goes, well, for great souls it may be possible, but for me, I'm not a great soul. So how will it be possible? Maybe I should just settle for being mediocre. I'll just settle for whatever I can do and let hope Krishna accepts that. But becoming actually all the things that Krishna wants, and the spiritual master wants, and the whole disciplic succession wants, and Lord Chaitanya wants. How can I do that? Because I'm so impure, so fallen. So Prabhupada addressed that question this way. Sometimes, Prabhupada said, people think that it was possible for Arjuna because he was a great soul and he had the direct association of Krishna. Krishna was there, standing before him, and he spoke Bhagavad Gita and he had his association. I mean, gee, if I could be with Krishna and he could speak Bhagavad Gita to me, and maybe I'm not such a great soul, but then there'd be some chance, but that's not going to happen. And so, what to do? Woe is me. And then Prabhupada replied, he raised the doubt and then addressed the doubt, saying, do not think like that. Because the message of hearing the message of Krishna in disciplic succession, it's the same as hearing from Krishna. And this is the mystery of disciplic succession. Krishna is speaking, and our hearing that Krishna said, sarva dharmam pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami mashutraha, it's the same as hearing Krishna speaking. And I could spend some time dramatizing that fact, but I'm going to pass over and present a couple of examples that might help to appreciate that this hearing and then remembering that which we've heard directly is Krishna. So one specific example of this is in Srimad Bhagavatam. We find also in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm going to tell two stories so the children will be entertained as well as the adults. Two stories, especially the Ramayana story. You got to hear this Neha, you got to hear the Ramayan story.
She's going to
Oh, go ahead. Come back. I specifically wanted the children to be very happy this evening. So, in the first canto, we find a series of chapters where after the Kurukshetra battle is completed and Maharaj Yudhisthira is installed on the throne and Bhishma Dev gives his parting words and everything is done and Krishna tries to leave and Ashwatthama does his heinous act and Arjun takes a vow to do him in, and that dialogue of whether he should or should not kill Ashwatthama takes place. The decision is made and his jewel and his top knot is removed and his hair half shaved, and with the sword of Arjuna he's sent away in disgrace, Ashwatthama. And Krishna's ready to leave. So he starts to leave, and first that is Ashwatthama incident, and then Queen Kunti comes and she tries to plead with Krishna, please don't go. Queen Kunti's prayers are there. Krishna smiles after she's finished. He doesn't say anything. He prepares to go. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he comes and makes a final plea. Please stay some days longer. And so Krishna obliges him. He stays some days longer. And then he's ready to go. And with all of his armies and all of the chariots and elephants and horses and infantry, and everybody marches off to Dwarka. So when Krishna leaves to go to Dwarka, he's got the exit row back there. I know. When the story is over, I'll tell you, and that's the cue, and you can go. You'll like the story, I guarantee it. So the Pandavas decide that Arjuna should accompany Krishna back to Dwarka. And there's two reasons why. One is to ensure that the safety, because mighty armed Arjuna will make sure that everybody gets back to Dwarka safely. And the other is that the Pandavas are extremely brilliant in diplomacy, and they understand that everything that Krishna appeared for is now concluded. So what's the plan? They actually had some intuition that Krishna was not going to return. He was going to depart. His pastimes were finished. So it's described in that first canto that the normal period of time it takes to travel between Hastinapur and Dwarka was long over, and no word came back. Arjuna didn't return. Weeks passed, months passed, long time passed, and not a word. In this case, it wasn't no news is good news. No news was bad news. And so many omens that indicating something very inauspicious had happened, that was Krishna's departure. But no one wanted to say anything. They didn't want to speak the word that Krishna has gone. So finally, Arjuna comes back. And when Arjuna comes back, the royal family gives a royal reception in a grand way, and Arjuna looks finished. His face is ashen, and he looks horribly morose, and everybody knows why. And they talk all around the subject. Please give us word of the Yadu dynasty. How are they faring? How is this one? How is that one? Please give us news. And most of all, how is Lord Krishna? And Arjuna can't speak. And somehow he manages to begin speaking a few words about the circumstance in Dwarka. And he begins speaking about his various activities with Krishna, the kindness that Krishna showed him in so many ways. And he goes on and on describing these activities of Krishna. And finally he remembers he recalls to mind the conversation of Bhagavad Gita. And just by remembering that conversation of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna feels very enlivened. And then he realizes that in a very, very kind and wonderful way, although Krishna's pastimes have concluded, he actually stayed with Arjuna in the form of that conversation. Not only he gave him teachings and guidance in how to execute the duties of life, but he stayed with him in the form of those transcendental and very, very wonderful instructions. So, that's a nice example of even the person who, what to speak of ourselves, who didn't have the association of Krishna, even Arjuna was feeling greatly despondent in feelings of separation from Krishna, but by remembering the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, then life came back to him, became fully enlivened in his proper position, feeling the association of Krishna in that way. And there's another very nice story from Ramayana where the same idea is described, and the pastime is taken from the final section of Ramayana after Ravana is killed and Sita and Ram are reunited, and Ram returns back to Ayodhya, and he's installed as the emperor, and the kingdom is resumed now under the leadership of Ram. And so this final section, there's very wonderful details describing how Ram ruled the kingdom. And the section that comes just before, just to give a little context to this, Ram was very concerned about, Valmiki describes, that the citizens were all prosperous, all happy, and perfectly content in their affairs of life, and they had all love and affection for Ram. So it was an ideal situation, perfectly auspicious. Even in that perfectly auspicious condition, any of members of the citizenry had access to approach the king directly. And sometimes there was no one to approach the king because everyone was fully content. So sometimes Ram would send Lakshman to go amongst the people and just inquire, is everything okay? Or sometimes he would go himself, and it's in this circumstance, going himself in disguise, that he heard of this talk of Sita being still in a contaminated condition, and Ram was still accepting her, and so he sent her away to the hermitage of Valmiki Muni. So in this section where it's described persons one by one who would sometimes come to see Ram, there's one dog that was found at the gate of the palace. Somehow this dog was able to speak. And the dog came with a disfigured head, bashed in head. And so the receptionist inquired from the dog, what can we do for you? I would like to see Ram. So an arrangement was made for the dog to come before Ram, and Ram received the dog and inquired from the dog, what is the purpose of your coming? And he described that in your kingdom there's one Brahmana who beat me so severely, just see. And immediately Ram called for the Brahmana, fetch this Brahmana, bring him here, I want to inquire from him. And I find it very interesting, the fairness with which Ram dealt with the situation. he inquired for the Brahmana, please give your side of the story, basically. Please explain what had happened. And the Brahmana, being a truthful soul, he acknowledged that I lost my anger. I lost my temper. I became angry when I was one day gathering alms, and no one was reciprocating by giving alms. And so by the end of the day, I was very hungry and very disturbed in my mind, and the dog was in the path, and so I beat him. I told him to get out of the way, and he didn't get out of the way, and I beat him. I beat him very severely. So I've done a very wrong thing, and you can punish me however you feel is appropriate. Although I'm a Brahmana, you are the king, and I've done a wrong thing, I should be punished. Whatever you decide, I will accept. So Ram turned to the ministers and asked the ministers what should be done. And they had varying opinions, or it was not concluded. And so Ram turned to the dog and asked the dog, you decide, and whatever you decide will be done. So the dog indicated that the Brahmana should become a family priest, I forget the term, Kula Guru, some term like that, of a certain village. So Ram's reply was, it shall be done. An arrangement was made that he would become, whatever that term, a priest within that village. And the Brahmana was skipping down the palace walkway thinking, this is wonderful. So that the priests in the royal court, they wanted to know, Ram, you have not punished this man, you've rewarded the man. How is this? Please explain. And Ram's reply was, you do not know the ways of life in this world. Let's ask the dog. He will explain. And the dog's explanation was that in his former life, he was in that same position. He was the, whatever it was, Kula Guru of that particular village. And he was doing his duties. He was a very righteous Brahmana, doing his duties very, very nicely. But he became attached. And this is a lesson of caution for those who may receive some position or some recognition or some facility, even in service, even in brahminical service, to serve others within this world. There's the risk, of course there's risk in any position, but there's risk in such a position that one can become enamored by that position and forget the position of service to the Supreme Lord and abiding by the codes of religion in order to purify one's existence in thinking instead being the enjoyer of that position. And as a result, I fell to this position now of being a dog. And so I don't advise anyone to take such a position unless they have the qualification. And then the ministers understood the conclusion of the dog, and Ram requested the dog, please return back to your original position, where you've come from. So that's one very nice lesson to be learned from persons who came to visit Ram. The very next situation that's described is a very wonderful one, where outside the palace gate, there was an assembly of many sages and brahmanas headed by Chavanamuni. And as soon as word came to Ram that the sages were waiting, he became very disturbed that they were even requested to wait until we find out from Ram if he will give you audience. Send for them immediately. And they came before Ram, and although he was the emperor, much like Krishna receiving Narada Muni, he offered respect and wanted to wash their feet and worship them and made profuse apologies that they had to wait outside. And after the protocol of reception was performed, he requested, basically gave them a blank check and said, write in the amount, whatever you want. He said, please tell me the purpose for your coming here, and whatever it is, it will be done. And the brahmanas said that we've come to you because we don't know what else to do. There's a very disturbing situation in our place of residence, and that their place of residence was Vrindavan or Mathura. At that time, the place was called Madhura. And they said that there is one very, very horrible rakshasa who is the most hideous person presently on this planet. Next to Ravana, this Lavana is an intolerable, fierce, indomitable personality. And in this holy land, so even at that time, during the time of Ramayana, Mathura, or then Madhura, was considered a holy land, a place of pilgrimage, that none of the sages can be protected. And we've tried, we've approached many, many other personalities to help us, and nothing has been successful. But you, Ram, you were able to defeat Ravan. So we've come to you. Please assist us with this difficulty. So Ram very boldly and strongly gave his assertion, do not worry. My promise to you is this Lavana will be sent to the abode of Yamaraj. But please, tell us something about who this Lavana is. What are the details of his situation? And so Chavana Muni begins describing about Lavana's history. He says that he's a descendant from a king from the previous Satya Yuga, King Lola, whose son was Madhu, after whom this Madhura or Madhupuri was named. And the family, although he was a king, he was the king of the Daityas. But he was a very exceptional personality, very much like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, both of whom were also in the lineage of kings of the Asuras. But they were just the opposite of Asuras. They were perfectly pious souls, and extraordinarily pious souls, so much so that they were the delight of the Brahminical order. And not only they were loved very much by the Brahmanas, but he was such a pious personality that he was given visits regularly by the Devatas. In fact, this Madhu was given a special gift by Lord Shiva. And the gift that he received from Lord Shiva was an expansion of Lord Shiva's trident. And the gift was, you take this trident and it will protect your palace and your dynasty. And this, I empower this trident that it will be able to defeat any enemy that comes to attack or give you difficulty. You just throw the trident at them and instantly they'll incinerate into ashes and the trident will come back to your hand. But there's one condition. And the condition is that you always uphold Brahminical culture and you always honor the Devas. Because if you fail to do these two things, the power will be gone. And this weapon is infallible. just as my weapon is infallible, this weapon is infallible. So, King Madhu made his residence in now the city of Mathura in Mahavan, near Mahavan, and he made his royal palace there, his headquarters, and he ruled in that sacred city. As time passed, a son was born, and the son's name was Lavana. Now, something very much like is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. King Anga, who was a very, very, very wonderful devotee king, somehow had a very bad son, King Vena. So King Vena was so bad, it was almost like the schoolyards and modern public schools in the cities of America. It's described it's described in the Bhagavatam that during recess, when the kids would go out and play, Vena would go and kill kids, and then he would, just for fun, he'd just go and kill other little children. And his father